interest in news overall does continue to drop. And over the last 5 years, it's dropped by about 15 percentage points on average across our survey.
This year was the first time in the last couple of years where we've seen a clear decline in trust.
Generally speaking, audiences are not very happy with the way those stories are being covered, particularly in North America and in much of Europe.
10% on average across the markets that we looked at said that they used an AI chatbot for news in the last week, and this is up from 7% last year.
Welcome to The Future of Journalism, a podcast from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism. I'm Mitali Mukherjee, I'm director at the Institute, and this is a very special one. As always, every year we are ready to present to you the key findings, the takeaway, all of it from the Digital News Report 2026. This is a big one, just as last year. It's a survey of over 100,000 respondents. It's close to 50 markets, and it is essentially a sense of how audiences are navigating the news space, what they make of it, are they engaging with it, and how much do they trust it. That and much more as we dive into these key findings with my two colleagues today. Jim Egan, who is lead author of the Digital News Report, and Richard Fletcher, who is director of research and deputy director, both of whom have been very, very busy collating these findings. Gentlemen, welcome. So we'll do a little bit of building blocks here, but maybe we'll start, Jim, with you as lead author to give us a bit of a 360 view on this. And the first one, and the big one that I think we've drawn a lot of attention to in the report, is what we call platformization. Why don't you walk listeners and viewers through this and what it means?
Yeah, platformization definitely emerges as one of the big themes this year. To put it in slightly more everyday language, I think what we're seeing here is the continuation of a long-term trend of reducing reliance on direct forms of news access through sources like TV news and so on, and increasing reliance on third-party platforms and sources such as social media and video networks in particular. It's tempting to talk about this as a shift, but I prefer to talk it more about a drift away from those traditional platforms in favour of social media and video networks, partly because that's what the data says. So social media has grown a bit this year, but not very much. It's at least as much about the reduction in usage, not just of TV news, but I think something which has been less widely talked about is the reduction of traffic and usage of owned and operated news websites and apps.
Let's walk through that a bit, Jim, both in terms of the drift that you point to and the trajectory that things have taken almost post-COVID, where we began to see the first signs of this. And as we stand here and now, and I think we saw signs of it in a few markets last year, but it's in more full form this year, where social and video platforms are actually overtaking other forms online, which is news websites and others.
Yeah, so this year, 30 of our 48 markets show social media and video networks being ahead of owned news websites and apps. There is some regional concentration of that. So if we talk about those 30 markets being almost two-thirds, those are mainly in the Americas, both north and south, in sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, and really, it's mainly in Europe that you still see news websites and apps being more widely used than social media and video networks. But there are exceptions to that in places like Singapore, Taiwan, and Japan, for example.
And maybe it's important to draw here as well the demographic variations of what we're seeing. And we've been tracking that. And I think it is a question that's top of mind for a lot of news organizations. What's happening with the younger audiences?
Yeah, there are demographic variations, although, I mean, I should say that this drift away from those traditional sources is universal across the age groups, with the sole exception of people over 55 whose usage of news websites and apps hasn't changed over the last 5 years. But if you look at the youngest of the audiences on our survey, so 52% of people aged under 24 are now saying that their main way of coming to news is on social media and video networks. And that's 32 percentage points ahead of the second preferred source, which is news websites and apps. So it's really stark for younger audiences. But as I say, this change in consumption behavior has happened right across the age spectrum. In fact, it is now no longer the case that you see news websites and apps being the preferred source for any single age group category. So if you're 55 and over, on the global average level, you prefer TV. If you're under 55, it's social media and video networks.
Yeah, and I think that is a quite big takeaway for news organizations. But if we were to parse what's happening on these third-party platforms a bit more, Jim, because some of this is sort of known to the news industry, isn't it? The fact that there is a lot of traffic moving to these third-party platforms. What do we see in terms of which platforms stand out versus the others?
Yeah, well, we talk about social media and video networks as a sort of collective grouping for all of these platforms. What we've seen in recent years, particularly since COVID, is the rise of these video networks in particular. So the two fastest growing have been TikTok and Instagram. YouTube growing less, but not because it's in decline. It's because it's an extremely large platform, particularly in the Global South, but also in other markets as well. And it's really those three in terms of being platforms for the both production, distribution and consumption of video news content that are the real growth stories recently. Although I should say that this year we've seen Facebook appearing to return to growth in terms of news consumption. And that to a degree is contrary to what many news media execs have told us about Facebook being something that they're deprioritizing.
But if we were to think about what's happening in the background in terms of algorithmic decisions, some of it ties in, doesn't it, with Facebook making that express decision to shift a little bit more towards news. But as you said, that heat map shows very clearly what's happening with platforms like YouTube and Instagram, so very much video first. Just a quick word, Jim, on the other parameter that we track, which is search as a gateway for news. Any quick highlights from there?
Well, yeah, I mean, the quick highlights are for younger people, we have seen search go down this year. So younger people seem to be using search as a gateway a bit less than other forms, whether that's going direct or using newsletters, alerts and so on and so forth. It's largely unchanged for people aged 35 and above. We haven't seen much change in search. But I'm only talking here about consumer behaviour. So what happens in terms of where people get referred onto sort of on that distribution side of things, we're not able to track in our survey. So people can using search a little bit less does not mean that search referrals are staying the same.
Yeah. The other big pillar, Richard, has been AI for a lot of news organizations. What have we found from last year to now in terms of audiences leaning into or leaning towards AI search bots for news?
Well, in some of our other research last year, we found that around a third of people say that they're using AI chatbots on a weekly basis. And that was last year, so it's probably gone up a little bit since then. And within that group, the dominant use case is now getting information. That's what people are using AI for predominantly. And of course, part of that is news. So in our data this year, 10% on average across the markets that we looked at said that they used an AI chatbot for news in the last week. And this is up from 7% last year. So, you know, 3 percentage point growth, but it's a clear signal, I think. But at the same time, it's also clear that it's still quite a niche source of news for now. And even for those that use it, it's one that tends to play a supplementary role in their news consumption, one that they use alongside other sources. Very few people in our data say that they're solely reliant on AI chatbots for news, for example.
What more can we find in terms of what this audience group looks like that's turning to AI chatbots, Richard? And sort of an additional question to that, how do they feel about this journey through AI chatbots on parameters like trust?
Well, certainly the user base is younger. So those aged 18 to 24 are three times more likely than those over 55 to say they use AI chatbots for news. The user base is also skewed towards those who are highly interested in news, are already consuming news in lots of different ways, and are generally just more kind of engaged with society. They're also more comfortable with technology, which is, again, something we found in our other research. In terms of trust, though, I think although trust levels in general, I think we'll come on to this later, are sort of relatively low when it comes to news, they tend to be even lower for the use of platforms and AI. Chatbots are a form of platform, and trust is in news from AI platforms is also quite low.
And if we were to look at this specific user, what would we be able to gauge in terms of their news diet? Because I know we've kind of termed them the power news consumers. So it's someone who's quite informed and quite tapped into the news, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's true. And you can start to see this when you look at the ways in which they're using AI for news. This is one of the questions that we asked this year in the survey. And of course, some people are using it to get the latest headlines. AI can do that now. It can deliver a kind of summary of the list of headlines. But of course, there's lots of other things that it can, in theory, do as well. So it can provide summarization. It can help people navigate the news. It can make news easier to understand. And I think this is something that we see respondents doing as well. And again, I think this fits in with the idea that these are sort of highly engaged news consumers typically who might have follow-up questions, who might want to use AI to get something from news that they're not currently able to get from other platforms.
Yeah, and not quite polar opposite, Jim, but at the sliding scale other end is news interest and those who express either interest in news or, as the case may be, sliding interest in news. What did we find there?
Well, I think, again, this is a continuation of a trend that interest in news overall does continue to drop. And over the last 5 years, it's dropped by about 15 percentage points on average across our survey. So from being, you know, close to 2/3 of people saying they're interested in news, it's now less than half. But I think there are reasons for that, both internal and external to the news industry. I think as platformization has increased, you know, there are increasing very evident, prominent demands on people's time and other sources of content clamoring for people's attention on the mobile phone. But events influence things as well, I think, a little bit. And throughout the survey this year, you can see people expressing a degree of disillusionment and anxiety. And for some, that means just being less interested in the news.
And I think a lot of the data, and we will come to that in our conversation, sort of reflects that level of volatility and flux, and I think this unease with what's happening with the broader political environment as it may be. What's a possible way for news organizations to think about these categories of users? Because we've pointed to three specific categories in terms of those who are super interested in the news and then tuned out.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way the data's been tracked in the Digital News Report for a while has been basically according to people's interest in news and their frequency of consumption of it. So those two things. And we have three named segments. So news lovers, the people who are most interested in their consuming news most frequently. Daily briefers kind of speaks for itself. And then casual users are people who, frankly, are not very interested in the news and don't consume very, very much of it. And we've seen the composition of those segments change over the last few years. So news lovers are now down to about between 20 and 25% of the audience, and the people who were casual users only used to be 16% of the total audience and is now about a quarter. One thing worth noting is that among those news lovers, even though there are fewer of them, that indicators of loyalty, engagement, enthusiasm, and so on are holding up and they're sort of undiminished. So the extent to which this is a problem depends on your vantage point and where you are in the industry. But if you're a commercial news provider very focused on your monetization strategy and so on and so forth, there may be a smaller population of those news lovers, but they are people who appear to be at least as enthusiastic as they used to be about what you might be offering.
And then somewhat related, another metric that we've been tracking for some years now is news avoidance. And to be clear, this is sort of as much an attitude as it is a behavior. What do we see this year with news avoidance specifically, Jim?
Interestingly, at the global level, it's basically unchanged news avoidance this year. So 42% of people saying that they're sometimes or often avoiding the news. If you look back to 2017, when we first started tracking it, I think the figure was 29%. So there has been a significant increase there. It's not the same in all markets. So, for example, in some of our Nordic markets, so Denmark and Norway, we saw quite significant increases in news avoidance this year, which may be to do with the news flow and news stories that were underway at the time. But overall, news avoidance is unchanged this year.
Richard, just picking up from the point that Jim and I were talking about in terms of this flux in the environment and a higher degree of uncertainty in people's lives, either, you know, personally or more broadly with the countries that they live in, we have seen an impact this year on trust in news metrics. Why don't you walk us through what the findings are?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've been tracking trust now for about 10 years. And over that time, in the countries where we've got data from 10 years ago compared to now, the sort of long-term picture is one of decline. But when you look in a bit more detail, you know, there are sort of patterns within that. So we saw pre-pandemic quite a steep decline in trust in news in many countries. And then during the pandemic, there was an uptick. It's quite a brief one. And then in many countries after that, there was a period of stability. And that's what we've seen for the last few years. And this year was the first time in the last couple of years where we've seen a clear decline in trust. So 37% this year said that they trust most news most of the time. The figure was 40% last year and the year before that as well. I think more striking than that, though, is also what we see in the data is that in 29 out of the 48 markets that we cover, there was a statistically significant decline this year. And in just one country, there was a significant increase. And I think that gives you an idea of how kind of broad-based this sort of trend is rather than sort of how sort of steep it is on average. Mm-hmm. There always is always differences by region when it comes to trust, and the kind of basic pattern that we've documented in previous reports still holds. So in Northern Europe, trust in news is quite high. It tends to be lowest in parts of Southern and Eastern Europe, and then you have kind of in the middle, Western Europe, Latin America and Asia. That pattern still holds, but as I said, the picture is one of decline this year.
Yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning this is the lowest reading in terms of trust in news since we started measuring this metric, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Is there a way to, and it sort of speaks to what we're seeing in some other findings, the Freedom of Press Index, for example, where for them as well, this is the lowest in 25 years. Many countries have now shifted into the dangerous or very dangerous category. Is there a way to sort of separate out how people are feeling about trust in institutions broadly versus what's happening with trust in news more specifically?
Well, it's really tough, actually, to do that. And you need kind of special types of data to really pull apart different sort of things that might be happening simultaneously and trying to say, well, what's the cause and effect relationship here? And I think to me, it's likely that there's a range of different factors at play. And I think some of those are probably directly connected to the media, such as the sources that people are using, and others are a bit more indirect. So where they think society is heading, what they think about, you know, world events in a kind of general sense might have an impact on trust in news. I mean, research has shown that there is quite a strong link between trust in politics, for example, and trust in the news. So it seems reasonable to me that you would expect that link to, you know, exist also between trust in news and trust in other institutions in society, perhaps even interpersonal trust as well. But it's really difficult at a kind of global level to pick those apart.
Yeah, and one of the other things we have attempted to do in our report, Richard, is also draw the correlation in terms of trust between gateways and trust levels themselves, where there is a slight difference in terms of those accessing news via these third-party platforms and what it does to trust levels.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we've seen in the past that trust in platforms as a source of news tends to be lower than trust in news in general, particularly when it comes to social media. And we also know from looking at the data over time, in one piece of analysis we did, we showed that trust in news has declined more in countries where social media news use has grown the most. So we can start to see some patterns already. Building on that this year, what we also saw is that when we measure trust in individual news brands, what we see is while trust is decreasing for some brands as well, in most cases, the declines are not as steep as what we see for trust in news in general. So what we think might be happening is that as social media becomes more central to people's news use over time, and at the same time, you know, big brands are becoming a bit more marginal to people's news use, less central themselves. This might be part of the reason why we're seeing this sort of steeper decline in overall trust in news versus trust in news brands.
And of course, we haven't mentioned it in detail, but the political reality is that many of these countries with large young audiences, high social media usage, also have a situation where there are far greater attacks on independent media, and there are sort of clamps that exist on critical media, and that's probably playing into this entire cocktail as well.
Yeah, it's not something we measured this year, but we have seen in previous reports that media criticism, or the level of media criticism that exists in a country, does seem to relate to low levels of trust in news.
Yeah. It's also not been a quiet year in terms of news stories, Jim. In fact, quite the opposite of it. And that's something we attempted to do this year, isn't it? Sort of track how audiences feel about some very big, very high-profile stories and how they felt the coverage was.
Yeah, that's right. So as well as asking about organisations, we asked about six individual long-running news stories, which I think by and large you can describe as global stories. So we asked people whether they thought the news media was doing a good or a bad job in covering inflation, the cost of living, in covering conflicts in Ukraine and also in the Middle East, specifically Gaza at the time of the field work, asking people the same question about climate change, also about Donald Trump's second presidency and immigration as well. Now, again, kind of you need to read the report to see how those responses vary on a national basis. But I think one thing that comes out is that, generally speaking, audiences are not very happy with the way those stories are being covered, particularly in North America and in much of Europe as well. And I would say of all of those, there are a few which really come out as being stories that are kind of like provoking audience dissatisfaction. The conflict in the Middle East was one. In some countries, coverage of climate change was another. But it's really migration that stands out as being the one that is extremely difficult, it seems, for news providers to get right. So on a global average basis, 11 percentage points worth of people thought news media is doing a bad job rather than a good job of covering migration. And when you cut that data in different ways, you can see some really sort of stark differences of opinion, especially if you look at a story like migration by political leaning, yeah, for example. So some really interesting things popping out there about, despite the fact that I think lots of news audiences continue to be supportive of the idea of what news could be, the way news is unsatisfactory for a number of them.
Any examples to share from the US, for example, which has traditionally had a quite kind of polarized cut to it, left and right?
Yeah, the US is definitely divided on political lines on most of those stories. It's people on the right who are least satisfied with the way Donald Trump's second presidency is being covered by the news. In the UK, for example, you see people both on the left and the right being unhappy with the way migration is being covered. In particular, on the left, which to some people may be somewhat surprising. Now, political affiliation and leanings is not the only way of cutting this. If you look at where people are consuming those stories in terms of the platforms, the more people are using traditional platforms, and I'm going to talk about news websites and apps as a traditional platform in this context, but in particular on TV, the happier people seem to be with the way those stories are being covered. Trust in news overall is also a differentiating factor. So generally speaking, and I think we have an example on France specifically, if people in France trust news, they're broadly happy with how these stories are being covered. If they don't trust news, they're broadly unhappy, with one exception, again, migration. Even people who trust news in France generally are unhappy with the way the migration story is being done.
I am looping back to the point about news interest and then more broadly about these platforms, because the other sort of running theme for the last year or two for news organizations is making sense of the news creator universe, Jim, which is, do we partner with them? Do we model our journalists to sort of emulate them? Or are they wholly, this entity that is completely different from what mainstream news thinks about? What do we know of how audiences can and do engage or turn to news creators?
Yeah, so we asked people about creators this year both in terms of their consumption of creators and also what they think about creators compared to traditional established legacy media. 27% of people across our survey sample say that they're consuming some content from news creators each week. And these are creators who are focused mainly on provision and commentary of news. But which I think is really interesting data is, well, to what extent is this 27% of people, to what extent is that displacing and replacing conventional news coverage? And I think the broad answer to that is not very much, actually. So we, on average, when we say to people, to what extent are these news creators fulfilling all of your news needs to the extent you don't need anything else? Only 13% of people are saying most or all of my news needs are met by news creators. And then if we drill down again to a smaller segment and we ask people, are you solely relying on news creators for all of your news needs? Only 3% of people globally are saying that is what they are doing. So it looks as though creator usage is sitting alongside people's other consumption of news. And on average, people who are using creators consume more traditional news sources than people who aren't.
So complementary rather than sort of abandoning one whole way of looking to the news. Richard, if they're on third-party platforms and they're not turning to the news websites, what does that mean in terms of paying for news, which in any case is sort of a slightly leaner, narrower basket to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen this year is that the proportion of people who say that they've paid for online news in some form in the last year is basically unchanged at 17%. This includes all forms of payment, by the way, so we're not just measuring ongoing digital subscriptions. There's also donations and other forms of payment that are included in that. And the basic pattern that we see on the national level is similar as well. So the Nordic countries, payment level is much higher. Norway in particular, 40% of people say that they paid for online news in the last year. But in many countries, including the UK, France, Germany, Canada, the figure is closer to 10%. So, and again, that hasn't really changed in many of these markets in the last few years.
Next of some of these outliers, is it emerging as a sort of a ceiling that seems to have set itself in place in terms of news payment at this point?
I think it's possible. I think that, you know, and it may be linked to some of the changes that Jim was talking about at the beginning. But I think the evidence from you know, as I mentioned, from the Nordics suggests that, you know, that ceiling can be very different in different parts of the world.
Is there are there a few models that emerge in terms of what's working? You know, because there's bundling that's been attempted, there's sort of bunging in other things like crosswords, cooking, all of that. So there's that alternative as well.
Yeah, I think we did ask some questions on this year, and we do see that among those that pay. The most likely sort of way of paying is giving money to a traditional or legacy news organisation. So around, well, it's more than half actually that said that they, amongst those that paid, that said they paid in that way. And then if you compare that to the sort of 10 or 20% that said that they paid, for example, money to a digital-born news outlet, you can kind of see the difference. And of course, you know, if people are paying money to a legacy news organisation, it's often in the form of an ongoing digital subscription. But again, one example we bring out in the report that shows how this can vary nationally is that if we contrast the UK with France, so in the UK, 80% of those that pay said that they're doing this by paying money to a traditional publisher, often in the form of an ongoing subscription. Whereas in France, the proportion paying to a digital-born outlet is much closer to the proportion paying for access to a legacy publisher.
One question that is fascinating and comes before the how do we get them to pay is why do they feel the need to pay and subscribe to news? What do we have in terms of colour there?
Well, I mean, the single most common motivation is simply people want to get access to content they can't access in another way. And we can think of these as kind of a kind of direct benefit. So people, you know, kind of satisfying a specific need that they have. And these tend to be more cited as reasons than, for example, more sort of socially oriented benefits like wanting to support journalism because they think it's good for society. These do feature in the data, but overall, they feature to a sort of smaller extent. Of course, some people are motivated by a mixture of both, and it is difficult sometimes to ask people to sort of specify their motivations for something they've already done. But I think it's, I mean, one other thing that we bring out in the report, which was, I think, was a bit of a surprise to us, was that in countries where payment levels are a bit higher, like the Nordic countries, these social motivations don't actually feature as strongly as the more kind of direct motivations. And, you know, it's not completely clear why that is, but it may be, you know, in addition to the issues around financial sustainability, it could be that just people don't perceive journalism as being under threat in quite the same way, and therefore not necessarily something that needs supporting through donations.
Because interestingly, it's a bit different in a market like Canada, isn't it, in terms of what people's motivations are. It's far more social in that sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So by contrast, in some parts of the world, you do see people more motivated by these kind of social reasons. And it's not always, in Canada's a good example, it's not always to do with press freedom. And it can come through.
We've always thought, I think, of the digital news report as a barometer, a weather vane of sorts. So pointing to where things are trending, pointing to the shifts, if you will, pointing to the drifts, as you did. Mm-hmm. What would you say are the big takeaways for you that you think the news industry could think about from the digital news report 2026? Because there's quite a lot to unpack. What's a good way to think about it and to look at both the realities of a changed environment, but also the points of hope?
Yeah, well, it is it is a year of instability, and I'm saying that in a narrow sense. We've seen a lot of the data move this year, but I think that's reflecting a wider feeling of instability as well. So a lot of turbulence and sort of volatility in the data, echoing people's uncertainty about you know, really dramatic changes that are happening in the world around them. We said, you know, as we've been discussing, interest in news is going down. Arguably, you might say that actually interest in news is holding up pretty well, given how much consumption is happening on people's mobile phones and how many other more straightforwardly entertaining opportunities there are for people to spend their time online. I think that what we see about creators is something which, as I say, is broadly complementary and is injecting new life, new freshness, new interest into the news experience for many people. So I think established news media has at least as much to learn and to emulate in an appropriate way as they do to be sort of rivalrous and sort of envious of the creator sector. There are challenges, I think, for regulators and policymakers as much as there are for media operators here, because how do you strike the right balance in terms of national legislation and regulatory measures in areas such as online privacy and online safety at a time when people are spending more and more of their time on these platforms, but also the mood seems to be darkening around them. But I think sort of one point that Richard mentioned earlier that I think, you know, news organizations should really, really focus on, even though unraveling the statistical causes of it is quite difficult, is although trust in news and the information environment is going down, trust in news organizations appears to be holding up.
As brands themselves.
And that, together with what we have about ongoing support for impartiality, ongoing positive attitudes towards the social role that public service media can play in markets around the world, that to me feels like a call to action. And rather than people sort of dwelling too much on the sort of bleakness and the difficulty and the challenges in this data, to perhaps say to ourselves, well, actually, good news media is needed more than ever at this particularly uncertain time.
And that there's not so much this and that. We're looking at quite a bit of conformity across audiences. For a time, it was sort of like young audiences existed on an island of their own. But now we're beginning to see similar trends in terms of their preferences, their gateways, all of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. Although, you know, there's been a debate in the news industry for a while about will younger audiences turn into an acquirer and grow up into their older counterparts. I think actually perhaps you're seeing older audiences becoming more like younger ones.
So not quite subscribing to the newspaper yet. Gentlemen, thank you both for your work on this. That is a wrap on this discussion. It's one of a seven-parter, so there's going to be lots more in terms of unpacking the digital news report, what's happening with public service broadcasters, for example, news creators in more detail, AI and the use of news. All of that is coming your way very soon. Also to say, if you'd like to stay across our work, you can subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on LinkedIn or Blue Sky, and you will be seeing a lot on the digital news report from the Reuters Institute team in a very short while from now, so over the course of the next few weeks. From the team here, goodbye and see you soon.